Good afternoon. Welcome to Embracing the Chase, brought to you by InfinitelyHome.com, the website for first-time and affordable home buyers, Building Fortunes Radio, and Blog Talk Radio. Embracing the Chase is a radio show presenting a unique personal improvement thought which will make your life better and your business grow. You know, if you want to be happier and improve your relationships, you need to cut out sarcasm. Why? Because sarcasm is actually hostility disguised as humor. Despite smiling outwardly, many people who receive sarcastic comments feel put down and often think the sarcastic person is a joke. Indeed, it's not surprising that the origin of the word sarcasm derives from the Greek word sarkesian, which literally means to tear or strip flesh off. Hence, it's no wonder that sarcasm is often preceded by the word cutting and that it hurts. What's more, since actions strongly determine thoughts and feelings, when a person consistently acts sarcastically, it may only serve to heighten his or her underlying hostility and insecurity. After all, when you come right down to it, sarcasm can be used as a subtle form of bullying. And most bullies are angry, insecure, and cowardly. Alternately, when a person stops voicing negative comments, especially sarcastic and critical ones, he or she may soon start to feel happier and more self-confident. Also, the other people in this or her life benefit even faster because they no longer have to hear that emotionally hurtful language of sarcasm. Now, I'm not saying that all sarcasm, I'm not saying that all sarcasm is bad. It may just be better used sparingly. Like a potent spice in cooking, too much of the spice and the dish will be overwhelmed by it. Similarly, an occasional dash of sarcastic wit can spice up a chat and add an element of humor to it. But a big or steady serving of sarcasm will overwhelm the emotional flavor of any conversation and can taste very bitter to its recipients. So tone down the sarcasm and work on clever wit instead, which is usually devoid of hostility and thus more appreciated by those you're communicating with. In essence, sarcasm is easy, as is most anger, criticism, and meanness, while true harmless wit takes talent. Thus, the main difference between wit and sarcasm is that, as already stated, sarcasm is often hostility disguised as humor. It can be intended to hurt and is often bitter and caustic. Witty statements are usually in response to someone's helpful remarks or behaviors, and the intent is to unravel and clarify the issue by accentuating its absurdities. Sarcasm statements are expressed in a cutting manner. Witty remarks are delivered with undisguised and usually harmless humor. And don't hesitate to tell others that you don't appreciate their sarcastic comments either. You know, one of the things we've seen today and in the last 2 to 3 years has been the, for want of a better term, the lack of or loss of the esteem of the presidency. When you have a person in the presidency that continually thinks that the best thing he can say is something sarcastic about the opposition, doesn't necessarily make the presidency stand above the crowd. In fact, in my opinion, he has taken what could have been a very potentially good presidency and turned it into a not-so-good presidency. And it's saddening because his sarcasm is hurtful and can be hurting to a lot of people. And so as we take a look at it, compare yourself to him. Compare yourself to what you're saying and say, wow, if this came out over the radio or the television or in the newspaper, how would it be taken? Because very frankly, that's the way I feel about most sarcasm. I do agree that there is some good sarcasm. There is some witty sarcasm, which, you know, can be used to motivate people and to make people laugh. Don Rickles was exceptional back in his day as being the sarcastic humorist. He had the capability to deliver it in a way that made you laugh. Not so much anymore with Donald Trump. So as I continue on in this vein, think about that a little bit. Think about, you know, how it's affecting how you feel about the presidency. Just some food for thought. You know, you can remember, there is a saying, and I honestly don't know where it originated, but it says, think well, act well, feel well, be well. And basically what it means is like garbage in, garbage out, or anything like that, where what comes out of your mouth usually reflects who you are. And so at the end of the day, you need to look at how you're responding to that particular person, how you want to make them feel, and then adjust your actions accordingly. Because there is a link between sarcasm and empathy. Evidently, people who are really good with sarcasm, that is, people who really get sarcasm, are also rather empathetic. Someone mentioned this finding last night on the radio, and I found it completely fascinating. So today I did some poking around to find articles about it, and there are several out there, but the gist of it is that in order to correctly interpret sarcasm, one has to use empathy to figure out what the other person is going through and what their intentions are. I find this extremely interesting because I am one, or was one, of the most sarcastic people that I knew. I'm not mean, unless you know the situation calls for it, and I'm trying to entertain my friends, but my sense of humor relies strongly on sarcasm, and most of my comebacks are of a sarcastic nature. Interestingly, I also find that I interpret sarcasm where others don't. At times, maybe I should do some detective work and make sure I'm accurately reading that sarcasm, just to be sure, is intriguing nonetheless. Anyway, not only am I really good at sarcasm, but I think I can safely place myself pretty far into the empathy side of the continuum. I won't belabor the point, but I devote a lot of my time to thinking about what animals are going through and how to give them a voice. Like if I'm going to cut the head off of a chicken, he may have some last thoughts, and so I have some empathy that translates to humans as well. Please don't ever ask me about the man who lost his home to a hurricane, or I will not be able to tell you a story without crying. He was on the news for like 16 seconds, and he just broke my heart. It's amusing and perhaps counterintuitive that cranky sarcasm and mushy empathy go together. But in my own personality, I totally see it. Come to think of it, this might be why some of the more vociferous animal rights advocates get into trouble sometimes. So anyway, I don't want to dwell on sarcasm too much. This is just the first half of our show, but what I want to do is I want you to take a look at it. I want you to understand what you're doing. If you're watching a movie and it's a tearjerker and you well up in your eyes, there is an empathy factor there that you need to understand and you need to use to your benefit. I believe that my life has been one that, in most cases, has been to help people. And what I'm doing now with affordable home ownership is all about that. Because I really don't want to be working, but I feel the need to be working with this. Additionally, there are very few jobs that a 71-year-old can do that benefit society. And this is one. And so for all intents and purposes, we're looking at the opportunity to build affordable home ownership opportunities where in areas where they aren't necessarily accepted. And to do that, you have to have some empathy for what people are going through. You can't say, well, if these guys get off their dead butts and just go get two jobs or three jobs, they could afford a house without down payment assistance and without government assistance. Unfortunately, there are people in this world who don't have that capability. And we need to protect those people. There are other people who, you're right, they are lazy. And generally, that laziness is reflected in their credit score. And so you can kind of look at it and say, now I know why these people live in the housing that they live in. And the rare person who has just been succumbed to the circumstances of their life because they weren't smart enough to realize where they were headed and circumstances got to them, they pay the price for that. And that's a thing that you have to think about as you move forward. So anyway, we're going to take a short 45-second break here for a word from our commercial sponsors, and then we'll get back in touch with a new topic.
Do you want to learn more about affordable home ownership and what Ed Robinson with the National Affordable Home Ownership Coalition nonprofit has going on in the Sarasota, Bradenton, Florida area? Well, go to infinitelyhomes.com and read all about it. Don't forget to go to the events page for upcoming seminars in the area, and the newsletter can be found on the Home Sweet Home page. See you on the website, which once again is www.infinitelyhomes.com.
There is a result to sarcasm and feedback that we get, especially when it results in a negative feeling on your part, and that is defensiveness. And defensiveness is a action which can kill a relationship and you don't even realize it's happening. And, you know, the response could be, as you're sitting there listening to this on the radio, what? Me being defensive? I'm not defensive. You're the one who's always defensive. Have you heard that conversation come out of your mouth ever? I have. You know? And so I think that what we need to do is look at why that happens, because it's a classic form of response to a piece of feedback. Throw up a wall, rebut the statement, and accuse the other person of the same complaint. The sad thing is, many of us do react defensively without even thinking about it. You know, how your brain distorts and deceives things points out to us as we think about other people's bad behavior toward us that we feel is intentional. But we dismiss our own bad behavior as inadvertent, a mistake, or unavoidable due to circumstances out of our control. This allows us to feel morally superior to the other person while simultaneously protecting our ego from the possibility that we may actually be incompetent or acting like a jerk. I think that at times, depending on the mood of the day, depending upon where you are in your processing for the day, that when you are faced with feedback that is not particularly attractive, that you don't take well, you strike out. You strike out and you cause that person to become defensive. But what you're actually doing is creating the defensive atmosphere by causing them to feel defensive in the first place. You know what they say, the best defense is a good offense? Well, that's what you're doing if you're having a discussion with someone and you go on the attack. Because the reality of the situation is, it is a negative thing. And we all do it. You know, my wife and I had a discussion the other day, and I did it to her. And on the radio, I will apologize because I should not have. She's allowed to feel what she felt. You know, and there were circumstances which created that problem, and I wasn't happy about it, and so I took out the guns. We do that. People do that. And we shouldn't, because what it does is it ruins relationships. Now, people react defensively because they anticipate or perceive a threat to their environment. Not usually because they're just wanting to be difficult. Unfortunately, defensive behavior creates a reciprocal cycle. One party acts defensively, which causes the other party to respond defensively, which in turn causes the first party to raise their defenses even higher. So on and so on. Defensive behavior can be a complex and murky issue. And for many people, their behavioral patterns stem from emotional, mental, or personality issues or tendencies developed over the course of their lifetime. Feelings of abandonment, inferiority, low self-esteem, narcissism, pretty much anything falls into the category which can create the kind of responses that we have heard. But beyond the mental and emotional factors, there are types of behaviors that cause people to respond defensively. Defensive communication has essentially six behavioral categories that create defensive responses in people. Dogmatism is one. It's the black and white, I'm right, you're wrong, either or, and the other kinds of the all or nothing thinking and communicating which cause people to act defensively. When you are in a conversation and you have a strong feeling one way or the other about the particular topic, to take a position where it doesn't allow for flexibility will create the kind of response you don't want from the people you're having a conversation with. You're better off saying, you know, perhaps my views don't work well with this topic. And maybe we shouldn't have this conversation because I'm concerned that it may lead to an argument. And that allows you to have an out. That allows you to walk away from something that you really don't want to talk about because you really have no flexibility. It'd be kind of like me talking to my wife about whether or not she is a fan of cheating husbands. Well, I can pretty much tell you that she is pretty dogmatic about how she would create that particular category, and she made that clear very early in our relationship. And so I think that personally, I would not want to bring that up, and if it was brought up, I would probably take it out because I don't particularly want to discuss that topic. That it's a no-win for both parties. You also can have places where it's a lack of accountability in the conversation, which means that you're shifting blame, making excuses, and rationalizing behavior, which leads people to raise their defense levels. You know, it's not fair to people if you're going to only talk about their negatives. You need to point out your negatives, too. When you say to somebody, you know, when you speak as low a voice as you speak, I can't hear you. And that makes me feel like that you really don't care whether I hear or not. And that is the kind of statement that you make. There is a cause and effect to everything. One of the things that Buddhism teaches is the fact that our life is based on cause and effect. And so if, in fact, you look at it and you say, what's the effect of my cause? Then you understand how the other person feels. And that's a very, very strong selling point on your behalf. That's empathy. Also, using all sorts of behaviors to control or manipulate people will lead to defensive behavior. No one likes to feel like they're being used by someone else. I keep using my wife and I as examples because, frankly, this is like my therapy session today. So let me share with you, this is another example. I'm the cook in the family. The deal that she and I made early on in our relationship was that she cooks, and I cook and she cleans up. I mean, that's kind of the way. But there are times when she's involved in something, not feeling well, when I just go ahead and do it. And she'll say to me, I can do that. I'll be out there in just a bit. And I'd say, don't worry about it. What I don't think about sometimes is how that makes her feel. Because I feel like, initially, I'm trying to do something good. But, you know, it's also manipulative on my part. It's something that causes me to feel better about myself. Well, look what I did. You know, I not only did I cook, but I cleaned up. La-di-da-di-da-di. Well, that's not what it should be. If you actually want to do something for somebody, then you really just need to do it. No comment needs to be made. You just go ahead and do it. And if they came out and they feel bad about it, then you walk away. You don't need to say anything. You know, I need to learn these things just as much as you do. Because we fall into habits in our lives. And sometimes they're not good habits. And so you need to get out of it really quickly. And that's what we're trying to talk about today. Also, superiority is something that especially men use. You know, you want someone to be defensive, then you act like you're better than them. You lord your power, your knowledge, your position over them, and see how they respond. One of the things that I really try to be careful of is that my experiences as a psychologist give me insights into people that other people don't have. And so if I use those insights as a weapon against my wife, it ends up being a negative effect. And so if you're going to speak about things that you know better than the person you're having the conversation with, you have to be understanding that they need to catch up. They need to get to the same level that you are in understanding what you're saying, and you need to ask that question. Do you understand? Do you agree? You need to get them on your side. Otherwise, the conversation you're having is basically self-defeating. So think about that as you talk to them. And finally, a constant focus on criticism and on catching people doing something wrong rather than right creates a climate of a defensiveness. As you get older, me especially get older, we have a tendency to be forgetful. Your mind is concentrating on one thing and you forget about the other thing that you were in the middle of. It happens all the time. And the fact is that if you have someone who continually points out those issues to you, it only makes you defensive. And defensiveness does cause responses which they don't want to hear. And so at the end of the day, you need to understand that when you're talking with someone and they fail to do something which is expected, You may think that the reminder is something that they need to hear, but it is not. It is something that they're aware of. In fact, probably just you doing that would be enough of a reminder without saying anything. You know, those are all the things that we talk about, and those are the things that cause issues when it comes to defensiveness. So what do you do about this? How do you create the issue? Well, you need to reframe your behavior. And you need to do it each and every day. You need to think about a little bit more before a response comes to fruition for you. You need to think about replacing the things that cause you to do what you need to do. Like, rather than label a person's behavior, defensive behavior as bad, understand it for what it is, defensive. Once you understand it, then you can explore why the person is feeling threatened and work to address the threat. One of the reasons we get so frustrated with defensive people is we try to deal with the behavior without addressing the threat. That is causing the behavior. So, your response should be, wow, I apologize if I created that reaction to you. Please tell me what I could have said better so that you didn't respond so defensively. That means you've just acknowledged to them that you know you did something wrong, and it does open the door to conversation. They may respond quickly as, I'm not defensive, but they know in their heart they are, and they'll be more open to a conversation. Relax. And get involved. Take a deep breath and move forward. You need to reduce the danger. Don't give them something that they're fearful of. People who are defensive have fears. And all you've done is open the can to those fears. You know, you need to replace negative feedback with questions and offers of help. You need to develop self-awareness and emotional intelligence. You need to move from dogmatism to openness. You need to treat people as your equal. Defensiveness destroys relationships from the inside out. It creates a climate of contention and tension that eventually leads to a loss of trust, alienation, and separation. The opposite of defensiveness is openness, and it creates an atmosphere of freedom, growth, respect, and trust. Identifying the root of defensiveness in our relationships and working toward addressing and removing those issues will help improve the overall quality of our relationships and the productivity of everything that we do within our team, our group, our family. It's a very, very important part of it that you eliminate that feeling. When I was growing up, I was physically afraid of my father. And then during my 12th year, I grew a foot and put on about 30 pounds and immediately felt empowered. And I remember my father coming in and telling me that he was going to get the paddle and beat me within an inch of my life. And I said, if you do, it'll be the last time you ever lay a hand on me. And he stepped back and looked at me and said, well, my, we have a man in the house. Yeah, and I said, yeah, and it's the only man in the house. And that was kind of the way our relationship developed into one of mutual respect. So what you need to do is you need to understand that you need to create a joint effort. One person who is making the effort not to put you in the position of defensiveness, and the other person who understands that they have a defensive position and they need to empower themselves. Both of